back to Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast. I'm James here, as always, in the studio with...
Stephen.
And Sean.
How are we, brethren? Doing well?
Yes, very well, thank you. Getting on well, happy, healthy. How about you, Stephen?
It's good to hear, yeah. Likewise, happy and healthy. Very busy with my master's research project. And also preparing my potential project for after my master's, which is looking at using... urine samples to diagnose concussion, which is novel.
Interesting.
Oh, sorry, hang on.
Somewhat novel.
Would that be described as a PhD?
Oh,
and also...
but seriously, is that a PhD?
Potentially.
So are we going to have to call you Dr. Stephen Whatley at some point in the future?
Maybe one day.
That's great, because I've got this niggling injury that I'm like, I just can't get an appointment, so that'd be really useful.
And also busy with fencing. Recently competed in the... British University fencing championships.
How many garden fences did you erect?
Oh, God. Dearie me.
Are you ever tempted when you're fencing to dress like a musketeer?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
Mainly because I want to win and not lose all respect of my peers and referees.
I would suggest that if you were to walk into the gymnasium auditorium, whatever it is that you do your fencing in, dressed as D'Artagnan, captain of... the guard of musketeers in the reign of Louis the 14th, I think. Mm-hmm. That would be really cool, and you would win outright because of that.
Just because of your style.
You just hand me the gold medal immediately.
Yeah, don't need to compete.
Yeah. So just something for you to take away there.
You should turn up and do that, see if it works.
I couldn't carry it off. You know, can I tell you why?
Why?
Because I have no balance, grace, sword-fighting ability, finesse.
I guess I'll take that as a compliment.
Whereas you could carry off D'Artagnan quite well, I think.
But generally, you're doing well, Steve.
Generally, I'm back to the point.
You're both good.
Indeed. That's a bit of a tangent.
So back to Freemasonry.
Yes. So got a very special episode today. 2023 marked the 20th anniversary of the formation of the Metropolitan Grand Lodge of London. Mm-hmm. And so today we thought it'd be wonderful to have Sir Michael Snyder, the Metropolitan Grand Master, along with Warren Duke on, who is the Deputy Metropolitan Grand Master, and the Metropolitan Grand Director of Ceremonies, just to talk to us about the history of the Metropolitan Grand Lodge, how it's different to provinces, how it's administered, what's a Metropolitan Grand Inspector, and all the other questions that those of us out in the provinces are curious about.
And I should add that when this was set up, that was absolutely what the interview was going to be about. Yeah. However, at the recent meeting of Grand Lodge, another dimension has been added to this conversation, because we found out from the programme master at the meeting of Grand Lodge that Sir Michael Snyder will become the next deputy Grand Master, and that Warren Duke had also will also become the next Metropolitan Grand Master. So the interview that you guys conducted has taken on another lease of life in itself, hasn't it?
It's got another facet to it that we weren't expecting.
So as you've just alluded to, Sean, you weren't available, actually.
Sadly not.
When we sat down with the brethren.
Sadly
so
not.
This is a pre-recorded interview done by Stephen and myself a little bit earlier. And we hope you enjoy it and find its contents really informative. I certainly learned a lot, and we hope that you do too. So here it is. Well, we are here with Sir Michael Snyder, Metropolitan Grand Master, Warren Duke, Deputy Metropolitan Grand Master, and Guy Foster, Metropolitan Grand Director of Ceremonies. Brethren, welcome to Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good Thank you very much.
Thank you for giving up your valuable time. We know you're all incredibly busy at the moment, and maybe more busy in the future, but we'll get on to that later, I'm sure. We're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the formation of the Metropolitan Grand Lodge, and we couldn't let the occasion go by without taking the chance to talk to you about its history. And so that's where we want to start, the history. There was the old system, there was no Metropolitan Grand Lodge prior to 2003, and then this decision was made to form MetGL. I was just wondering if you could talk to us about the thought process behind that, why it came around, why the decision was made to abandon the old system and form Metropolitan Grand Lodge in the first place.
Well, I wasn't actually around in terms of Met or the rulers in London at the time, but I was obviously a Mason and involved in London. The simple fact is that the then Assistant Grand Master used to have responsibility for all of London Masons, as well as obviously his role as Assistant Grand Master, which was quite a challenge, I've got to say. And the Assistant Grand Master at the time was Lord Northampton, Marquess of Northampton. And he thought that the system, which had chairmen of groups of London Masons, didn't work particularly well and wasn't serving London Masons as well as it might. So when he became pro-Grand Master, subsequently, he led the charge, as it were, to form what became Metropolitan Grand Lodge. And the purpose of this was so that it had some sort of structure that would literally address the needs of London Masons. There was some talk of whether it should be one unit for the whole of London or whether it should be divided into more than that in terms of provinces or whatever. But I think they rightly came to the decision that one entity for the whole of London, because it would have been very difficult to split it. How would you split it? North, south, east, west? Where would you have the boundaries? How would you do it? It would have been very difficult, and I think wouldn't show the unity of London and the ability of an organisation, administration that could actually serve London Masons properly. So therefore, that is what led to the formation of Metropolitan Grand Lodge.
And what would you say is the reason for it being called the Metropolitan Grand Lodge rather than the Provincial Grand Lodge of London, for example, like most provinces are of course called?
I have no idea because I wasn't involved. But I think Metropolitan connoted a metropolitan area, and there is provision in the constitution of UGLE for there to be other metropolitan areas should that ever be required. And I think the idea was that you had to set somebody that was running metropolitan, in other words, a much bigger area, apart from provinces. I mean, we are four times the size of the biggest province. So it's a different animal, really, in terms of organisation.
Different kettle of fish entirely,
So
in terms of that, obviously, we understand from the history why it was formed, why it's different. But in terms of Metropolitan Grand Lodge today, what makes it so different, aside from just the numbers? Because, of course, that impacts the organisation, how it's structured, ranks, Metropolitan Grand Inspector scheme. Could you tell us a bit about...
I'll start a bit and then I'll get someone that really knows, i.e. Warren, to take over from me. But no, seriously, it's so big that you can't run it like a province in terms of the administration of it. And we have 12 full-time members of staff that help us to run it. We have something like 250 volunteers that help run it. And then we need not only the Metropolitan Grand Master, but deputies, assistants, and then Metropolitan Grand Inspectors. Now, when I took over as Metropolitan Grand Master in 2015, yes, October 2015, thank you, Warren, there were 20 inspectors. There were six assistant Metropolitan Grand Masters, known as AMETs, and two deputies, one on the Royal Arts side, one on the Craft side. And I came to the conclusion very quickly that one person can't manage all of that with that number. And each inspector had about 100 units, whether on the Royal Arch or Craft side. And I felt that that was just too much for somebody to manage. And so the then High Rulers, in fact, readily agreed that we needed to have another 10 inspectors. And we increased the number of deputies so that I have three on the Craft side and one on the Royal Arch side to help administer and serve the area. And that works pretty well. Now, the inspector's job is probably the most difficult job in masonry. I mean, it's quite they still have 55 to 60 units, craft lodges or Royal Arch chapters each. And that's really difficult. So over the last year, we introduced MAGIs, Metropolitan Assistant Grand Inspectors, that will help them to focus on certain areas within their inspectorates. And that seems to be not have it was very well received, but it also seems to be helping the inspectors. So it's a very different system.
Yeah,
it's a very different system from provinces.
Mm. And could you give us a little bit of insight into what the Metropolitan Ground Inspectors actually do? So what is their job description to a certain extent?
Yeah, it's worth you asked the first question, which is why are you different, but it's worth starting from a position of how much is just the same, right? We're still Freemasons, we're still lodges and chapters. We have all of the same opportunities, all of the same challenges. But as Michael's pointed out, the scale of it demands sometimes it's a different answer. And I'll give you one example. As Michael talked about some of the numbers. In Metropolitan, we have over 700 visiting officers. Wow. So the challenge to scale that value a good VO will add to a lodge or a chapter and engage with them properly, we can't do that by word of mouth, one handing it down to the next. So we've got quite a sophisticated training online, taking mindful of people's time. They have to go through sort of passing out a test type situation, and then they get one-to-one support going in. And without that, it doesn't matter what we do in Metropolitan, we would orphan lodges and chapters. So it's not that anything's different, it's the outcome and the way in which we have to go and scale is often very, very different.
One thing that I think I've noticed, I'm a member of, for example, Lodge Sine Nomine, which is not within Metropolitan Grand Lodge, but we do meet in London. And one thing, obviously, that's apparent from that is we have a reduced number of meetings compared to a lot of craft lodges in provinces. As in, so in the District of Gibraltar, in my mother lodge, we meet 8 times a year, whereas I know a lot of London or Metropolitan lodges meet 4 times a year or 5 times a year. Could you just tell us a little bit about why that happens?
It's a very old stat, so it might be out by a little bit, but I was told once that 85% of London lodges meet 4 times a year, so you're exactly right. And my mother lodge in Cornwall meets 10 times a year.
Wow.
That's without the LOIs and the committee meetings every month. Quite what we talk about is a mystery. and I think it's a function of living and working in and around London, actually. I think there's a real sense of occasion when you come to Freemasons Hall and the dining and the experience, etc. But I just don't think it's practical for busy professional people or people travelling in and out of London to sustain that sort of level of meetings, I think. I think that's formed itself quite naturally.
Another question on the difference point that I think when you're in a province, you always notice when you see somebody is that there's no past provincial or Met grand ranks. It's London grand rank or it's senior London grand rank. And again, just wondering if you could talk to where did that come from? What was that, the thinking behind that decision?
Well, it really inherited what was there before Metropolitan Grand Lodge existed, because the assistant Grand Master had to deal with it in a way, and therefore it was London Grand Rank or Senior London Grand Rank. I've got to say, from our point of view in Met, it's quite convenient, and it would be logistically really difficult to keep giving people promotion up the past ranks throughout, Met. It would be really, really tricky. But in fact, we do differentiate between those active ranks that are London Grand Rank and those that are Senior London Grand Rank. So there's a division in the deacons between, and that's where it goes. Senior deacons are upwards are Senior London Grand Rank, and Junior downwards are London Grand Ranks. There's an awful lot of emphasis on this, but is it worth having a lot of emphasis? No. I don't know. We just had another change, which is we did have a past Metropolitan Grand Steward's rank, and I think Guy could say a bit more about this because it was really, the whole idea of escorting officers and help within the running of the ceremonial is really important. I don't know if you want to say something, Guy.
Yeah, I mean, these, generally speaking, the Metropolitan Grand Stewards are younger Masons. And it's, for a long time, we didn't see a lot of their red regalia out and about. And now, now they're past Metropolitan Grand Stewards, we see their red regalia out a lot more. And it's just lovely to see some young Masons getting involved. So, yes.
As a past provincial grand steward, I can attest to how nice it is to see people out in their red aprons. It's a shame I don't get to wear it anymore because it is quite special when you walk into a lodge and people go, what on earth are you wearing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a very special time wearing that. I kind of very much miss it. So what's the current makeup of Metropolitan Grand Lodge? How many members do you have? How many lodges do you have?
I don't know if I can tell you the exact number, but we're about 28,500
wow.
Masons, with about 35,000 to 40,000 memberships, in other uh-huh. words, multiple. There's about 10,000 Royal Arch members, and in terms of lodges, there are just under 1,200, 1,180, I don't know, something of that order.
Yes.
And there's about 500 chapters.
And how many of those units have you managed to get to in your time?
Not enough.
I think it's a huge amount of units, isn't it? It'd be almost impossible to get to everyone.
It was one of the reasons, because I do have quite a busy life outside mm-hmm. Of masonry as well. And I always encourage people to do that. It's a hobby. You know, you have your family first, you have your work second, and then you have your hobbies and pastimes, including masonry. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is quite important to have things yeah. outside masonry as well. But I simply, as an individual, when I was asked to do this role, could not get, I don't know if anyone could get round that number of units approaching 1,800. It just would be very, very difficult. So that's one of the reasons why I asked for having more deputies. And the deputies are really very senior Masons, and they also go round, so they share that role uh-huh. with me, and then we have the assistant Metropolitan Grand Masters that do the same thing, as well as the Grand Inspectors. I mean, they have these 55 or 60 units each, and they go around as well. So I think there's enough chains, if you like, to visit lodges and chapters, mm-hmm. but in terms of myself, afraid not.
And how much active participation do you see of, for example, the magis, as you called them, or magis, in terms of like how much do they get involved in the lodge? Do they just visit? Are they reporting back to Grand Lodge? Are they participating at all?
Well, I'm sure they participate in their own lodges and chapters, but yeah. their role is not as a visiting officer. What they used to be was senior visiting officers, and as well as the visiting officers that Warren mentioned, the 700 or so. And there was quite a bit of confusion between senior visiting officers and visiting officers. And so we have abolished the term senior visiting officers and translated those into magis. And the Metropolitan Assistant Grand Inspectors, their role is to have a responsibility to the Metropolitan Grand Inspector within that inspectorate for particular areas, whether that's honours and promotions, whether that's training, VOs, or whatever else it is. And that was very well welcomed, because mm-hmm. it's utilising these really experienced Masons, you know, with great commitment to serving the members of London, Masons in London, and it's given them a role where they can make a positive difference to help the inspector, which is really important because they need the help, as well as concentrate and get more expertise in a particular area. And then Warren has, and he can say about it, but he's organised yeah. sessions where they can go into their particular types of activity.
We give the inspectors a lot of latitude. They're rulers in their own right, and they have their own units to set up their teams and their Metropolitan Assistant Grand Inspectors. And they will each have a core area, and it's up to us now, the office is relatively new, to offer them lots of training and support and guidance. And a collective understanding of what their peers are doing as well. So there's some common execution there. But also I would say the thing that brought this about, and it was Sir Michael's vision, I should say, but we're getting consistent feedback from the lodges and chapters of who do I deal with, right? I don't know, I've got my VO, but I see my SVO every other meeting, and the inspector came last year. So actually there's a bit of clarity, we like to think, for the lodges and chapters now, where And the VO has a lot more autonomy to go and engage and create those relationships and make the difference through Metropolitan Grand Lodge. So it's early days, actually, but it's so far we're seeing the reaction.
And as Met Assistant Grand Inspectors, they are active officers. So,
yeah.
you know, we processed them into Met Grand Lodge the other day, and we recessed them out of Met Grand Lodge. And I think they appreciated it as active Metropolitan Grand officers. Mm.
You mentioned a couple of times the chapter and the amount of members that you have in Royal Arch Companions. And obviously the Metropolitan Grand Chapter likewise is much larger than any provincial chapter. How much do you see, for example, the new initiative to incorporate the exaltation fee into the initiates fee. How much do you see that impacting your membership? Do you feel that the numbers will grow closer between chapter and in the Met area in particular?
Well, I do happen to sit on the Board of General Purposes, and so I was, you know, much in favour of this move. And its prime purpose was to simplify things for Masons so they feel that Royal Arch is a natural part of craft
part of the
masonry.
Same journey, yeah.
And I think that's really important. Obviously, it's early days, and we haven't yet done the same thing in Met, although I've no doubt my successor will consider that in due course. I think it's a really positive move, and I think it's not one where we see more memberships or less memberships. I think what we see is them people understanding that it is one journey, as you've just said, and that one journey will, I suppose, inevitably lead us to more craft masons becoming Royal Arch masons, and I think that's really to be welcomed.
So no pressure, Warren, then.
Yes, thanks for that, Michael.
So as we said at the beginning, we've just celebrated the 20th anniversary of the formation of the Metropolitan Grand Lodge. I was wondering if you could just talk to us about those celebrations. How did you mark that momentous occasion? How did the members receive that? What special events did you put on? How did it go?
Well, the main event was the 20th anniversary banquet, which mirrored one that we had 10 years ago, actually. So there was a direct mirror, but it was over 600 people in the Guildhall. And one would immediately think, oh, well, that was just a bit of a knees up to celebrate a birthday party. But actually, my takeaway was it was a great opportunity to say thank you to the people who had got Met off the ground in the first instance, who support either directly or a lot of the time indirectly. So it's partners, it's other halves, it's all of those people to say thank you to them for allowing us to do what we do and dare I say, do reasonably well. And also as well as celebrating a 20th birthday. I think it actually turned out to be a 21st birthday. So a coming of age, if nothing
quite.
Else.
I mean, it was really incredible because Spenny, as in Marquess of Northampton, doesn't really participate very much at all. But he responded to when I got in touch with him, and he and his wife came. And I think they really appreciated it as well. And my predecessor, Russell Race, was there. It was as well as the guest of honour, Jonathan Spence, obviously, as the program master. But it was a really happy occasion. I think people really appreciated it, as Guy has mentioned. And we didn't want to do too much celebration. We wanted it to be a marking of a successful part of a journey rather than a arrival at a destination. And I think we do that. And I mean, it's also, there's lots of other aspects of Met that are so fantastic because we're of a size. You asked earlier about the size. But we're able to raise very significant amount of money thanks to the generosity of London Masons, which always amazes me. At the moment, we're obviously the London Air Ambulance. And I was able to announce in March at the annual meeting that we'd got to 1.9 million in 1 year. In addition to normal giving, because there's lots of other normal giving going on, 1.9 million, which is pretty incredible, and I think reflects so well, not just on London Masonry, but on all of Masonry. And I think we were also celebrating that as well. So I think that's really good news.
Yeah, just to add, you travel in on those sorts of events, going in with my partner, Susanna, not really knowing what to expect, a grand dinner at the Guildhall. And it was just so much fun. There was such a good atmosphere. There was a nice sense of, because there were so many people, as Michael has said, that have been on that journey. And to just to relax and celebrate, it was a really good evening.
It must have been so spectacular to really just take in the enormity of what's been achieved over that 20 years. And that's such a nice thing that essentially almost the founder of that got to see the progress from 20 years on. It's so lovely.
I was just thinking there, actually, Guy, about something you said a moment ago, which was thanking the people who were involved with the original creation of the Metropolitan Grand Lodge. Because, as Stephen just said, a lot of those people are still around, of course.
They are, and they've watched. It must be like a parent watching a child grow up and go off on its journey. Mm. Having said that, I think Michael touched on it. I think it is very much behove on all of us that this isn't a destination. It's just part of the journey, and there's plenty more to look forward to in Met.
So, Michael, you said at the very beginning when I asked you about the history that part of the reason for forming Met GL was the desire to look after London Masons a little bit more. You know, when you look back on the last 20 years, do you think that aim has been achieved by the formation of Metropolitan Grand Lodge? Do you look back and think it has been a success? And if so, why?
I very much do think it's been a success, is a success. Mm. That does not mean we haven't got more to go on this journey. So good luck, Warren. but no, of course, nothing is ever perfect and nothing ever works exactly as one would wish it to do. And there's so much more to do. You know, during COVID, for example, it's amazing how everyone rallied round. Obviously, there were lots of Zoom meetings and the like. And there were some Masons that had not been to their lodges or chapters for years that re-engaged and are still re-engaged. Mm. Of course, we lost some people, and sadly, some Masons passed away, and so on. But it was just, well, out of that disaster of the pandemic came some really good things of how Metropolitan does rally round our members.
Yeah.
And there were the afternoon tea sessions. These were virtual ones, I hasten to add. They weren't like anywhere else nearer to number 10 Downing Street. These were virtual meetings. Yeah. But they enabled perhaps Masons that were lonely and isolated to be able to engage with others.
Yes.
And they were held, you know, regularly so people could do it. So, I mean, that's just one example. The whole thing, in my opinion, is working. We do support Masons, and people, and we have plenty of volunteers coming forward to give freely of their time to help with Met and serving, you know, Met Masons. And what is really encouraging to me is some of the younger Masons. I'm not going to name names for obvious reasons, but there are some that we were only talking about, the three of us were actually only talking about an hour or two ago, that just are so electric with enthusiasm, and they're motivating other young people to join, to participate, to give more of their time. And that, for me, actually is the success, because it's not people like me at my age. It is the young Masons and young people that are going to make the future of Masonry.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Met encourages.
Leading off of that, you've alluded to it a couple of times. Congratulations, both Sir Michael and Warren, on your new roles, respectively.
Thank you.
You said about the young Freemasonry being the future, of course. Warren, how do you see that in your upcoming tenure? How do you see that playing within the strategy of Metropolitan Grand Lodge? I mean, you've got the university scheme, which also exists within that, which we are, James and I are both fairly passionate about as members of it, and given our age, of course. So yeah, I'm just interested to hear what your thoughts on that are.
That's a broad question, but I'll pick up on the university scheme. I was at one last night, and I presented a 70th certificate in a university lodge to a 93-year-old brother. It was a humbling experience, but that aside, they then did a double passing, which went really, really well. Half the room was under 30, essentially. And at dinner, what became really clear, they'd invited their partners, and there was a big white table laid on, was how much fun they have outside of the lodge room. So they have drinks every month, they go out, they go socialise in London, they go on trips and do things. And you could see the enthusiasm as a fellow craft that they had for their hobby. And that's the essence of it. It isn't about me anymore in a future basis of membership. It's to us to facilitate that, to create that environment where these lodges can thrive. And it is as simple as that. I'll embarrass Michael a little bit, because he said to me, I don't know if you remember saying, they said this years ago, he said, I don't know why they call us rulers. We should be called servants. We're here to serve and support 28,500 members, and that's it.
Well, thank you, because that's certainly an inspiring message. And so, Michael, in your new role, it'll be, I'm sure, rather different. Is there anything, you'll obviously be following the 2022 7 years and beyond strategy, but is there anything in particular that you have a vision that you want to bring to the role and achieve in your new and exciting position?
It's a difficult question to answer.
Indeed, sorry.
Because I haven't actually got into it yet. But I see my role primarily as supporting the pro in his drive with the strategy, with the plan, with the membership challenge, and encouraging all provinces and Met to continue to drive the membership challenge, which means inevitably, as we've just been talking about, engaging more with younger Masons, enabling them to come to the, you know, the best version of themselves to in Masonry, to draw in their friends into an environment where they are happy to draw people into and enjoy themselves. Because if we aren't having fun, as well as the ritual being okay and, you know, and so on, it's there's little point. You know, we won't succeed unless we're having fun. Now, as you probably told, you can tell from the atmosphere in this very interesting padded cell. Sorry, no, this this recording
spared on this studio. I can assure you,
this studio here. And if anyone, you can't see it, those that are listening, but it looks as though I should be in a straitjacket and not be able to hurt myself. But you know, seriously, it's all about how the future of Masonry can thrive, and that means the younger people being able to do it. So that means, and I'll say this again, I say it to everybody in Met, you know, that means you, if it's a weekday meeting, it needs to start later, the ceremony needs to be streamlined, you can still get away, the older ones amongst us can still get away by 9 o'clock, and it needs to be proportionate to the needs of that lodge or chapter, to the members of that lodge or chapter, and that to me is really important. So I can assure you I shall be taking that with me and being able to influence for that, whatever. I hasten to add, I know that that is a view that's entirely shared by the Programme Master and indeed the Grand Master, who also sees the same vision. And I look forward to helping with that journey, because it is for the Programme Master and the Grand Master to lead. But I will certainly be using whatever skills and attributes I've got to get that message across, and hope that all of those of us that are serving members, all the so-called rulers, throughout UGLE and Supreme Grand Chapter, realise that that's what we're here to do, to facilitate younger members to enjoy themselves and to get this organisation thriving even more for the future.
Well, brethren, thank you so much for coming to talk to us on Craftcast, and happy birthday to the Metropolitan Grand Lodge of London. It's been great to talk to you, and hopefully we'll see you again at some point in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right, well, that was certainly very interesting. Learned a lot about Metropolitan Grand Lodge, yeah. With its history, with its peculiarities, something that makes it so different to the provinces and districts overseas. And yeah, it was fascinating talk with a range of different views as well, but all with a unifying message.
And I think one of the things I took away from what Sir Michael said at the very beginning about why Metropolitan Grand Lodge was originally put together was about supporting the experience of the London Freemason. Mm. And I think that really speaks to the idea that he said about being servants to the members rather than rulers, and how that's how he views himself. And I just really admired that way of looking at his role.
Yeah, great job, guys, by the way. I thought that was brilliant, really interesting. Mm. I learned a hell of a lot about London Freemasonry, which, as a London Freemason, I should probably know.
Did you not know all that already?
I didn't know half of it, but fascinating to hear, and also really interesting to hear the views of our next Deputy Grand Master about how he sees that role, and also to hear from Warren, who's obviously the next Metropolitan Grand Master. So
it certainly had a bit of everything, really. The one journey, one organisation.
Absolutely.
Future of Freemasonry and young Freemasonry, engagement across the board, all of it. So, yeah, we hope you enjoyed it. We certainly enjoyed interviewing the brethren, and we very much look forward to seeing you next time.
And don't forget, get in touch with us, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, email us, podcasts@ugle.org.uk, UGLE_Grand Lodge on Twitter, United Grand Lodge of England on Facebook and Instagram. And with that, we'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast. The podcast is hosted by Sean Butler, Stephen Watley, and James Dalton. The producer is Marta Zandri. And the podcast is edited by Trisonic.